If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
The case I have for you today is one that I have touched on in a previous episode of Unsolved Cases that were from in and around Calgary. But today I want to give you the story in a lot more in-depth and, like, who knows, maybe somebody out there listening knows something that could finally bring closure to the family. This is the murder of Kelly Cook.
You obviously have a very high tolerance for murder.
He is beyond saving. And I lost a piece of my heart that I'll never be able to get back.
God bless your dark, broken soul.
About 80 kilometers or 50 miles east of Calgary is a small rural town called Standard, Alberta. And there's only about 160 houses in the town and about 353 people in the population has actually remained pretty stable over the years. The town originally housed mostly Danish immigrants who took up farming, but the oil and gas industry has been running strong there for a number of years, and there's still some oil rigs out there just still pumping away. The biggest employers there, if you're not a farmer, would be Agrium, which is a fertilizer company, and Husky Oil. Kelly's story begins in the spring of 1981 when she was 15. Back in 1981, I was 10. I was living here in Calgary in varsity. We had red shag carpet in the living room, and we had the fanciest wallpaper that you have ever seen. It was silver and shiny, but there was a design in it of like gold velour going through it. My mom had a perm that year. My dad might have too. I don't remember, but I did remember he had some pretty long sideburns. And rather than rehash like the documentaries and news sources that I found online, I actually went back to the old archives of the newspapers, because as stories get told sort of over the year, I think important details can get lost. So I'm relying on the news of Kelly's story as it was reported at the time that everything kind of went down. So if it turns out that you heard that it was a blue car, not a beige or something like that, I can't change what was reported at the time, but there was a lot less control over the media back then. So in some ways, the information was a little bit more accurate and reported more from the sources, but it could also be less accurate if those sources were like sort of friends or something. So, but I'm doing my best here. Anyways, in this quaint little close-knit farming community lived the Cook family, who had moved to Standard from Montreal about 3 years before. There was Dad Walter, Mom Marion, Kelly, who was 15, and then she had younger siblings Marnie and Heath. Kelly was quickly able to make some new friends in the town, and she seemed actually quite a bit older than her years. And the pastor at the Lutheran church, Christine Lund, had met Kelly shortly after they'd moved in. She'd come to visit her parents, but when they weren't home at the time, so Kelly had invited the pastor in and made her a cup of coffee, offered her some cookies, and chatted very enthusiastically about figure skating, which was something that was a bit of a passion for her. She was polite, she was well-mannered, so she had been able to gain the trust of the neighbors and other townsfolk as a responsible babysitter. Now, lots of teens at 15 do babysitting back then. It was her friends did it. It was just something that young girls did. And word, of course, gets around. I mean, my daughter wanted to babysit it. I think she was about 13 at the time. She had no problem getting takers here, even in the big city. So in a small town like Standard, where everybody quite literally knows everybody, and when I say that, I'm not being dramatic, like, in a town of 353 people, over the course of a year, you would have encountered every single person on at least one occasion at the grocery store or the post office or something. And on the morning of April 22nd, 1981, Kelly's getting ready for school when the phone rang. So she grabbed it, but there was no one there. Now, that happened a lot back then. It was usually a wrong number and the person was just too embarrassed to say anything, so they hang up. So she put the phone down, she went back to what she was doing, and about 5 minutes later it rang again. Now this time she answered it. It was a man that said his name was Bill Christensen and that he had recently moved to the area and needed a babysitter until midnight for that night. He told her that she had come highly recommended and that he knew her neighbors, and he did name her neighbors by name. Now the name wasn't familiar to Kelly per se, but Christensen is a Danish name, so it was about as common in the area as like Smith or Jones would be. No one knows for sure, of course, exactly what the man said, but we know from what she said to her mom and then some witnesses that will come later that she kind of like she put the phone sort of the way you do, like to your chest, and she said to her mom, did she know them and could she babysit for them? And her mom said, well, as long as her homework was done, that was no problem. Now, I cannot stress enough how unsuspicious this phone call would have been at the time. I mean, if you consider where the call took place and everything, like he's not going on trying to alleviate her fears by, oh, don't worry, I'm a good guy or whatever. He's not being rude or impatient with her. He's giving her just enough information so that she knows that he knows that he's from around there. He does a little bit of name dropping, but not too much name dropping. Like, and of course, he gives a last name that is super common in the area. And so common that if you heard the last name Christensen, you would probably just assume that you knew them. Like, at least of him or someone sort of like him. Like, you know, like, well, I know a Todd Christensen or something. But something must have kind of bothered Kelly about it, because that day at school, she was kind of asking around to some of her friends if they had ever met or knew a Bill Christensen, and no one had. So that night, Kelly was on the phone with her friend for about a half an hour before Bill was supposed to come and pick her up. She asked her friend if she had ever heard of Bill Christensen, and she also had said no. So at 8:20, Marion watched through the living room window as a beigeous brown North American make of a sedan pulled into the driveway, gave the horn like a friendly little honk. Now, Marion couldn't see much of the guy because just that he had darkish hair. It was past dark, so there wasn't really much to see. Kelly grabbed her coat and her shoes, tossed her mom like a see you later, and then her mom called after, remember to phone when you get there, which was a standard thing that they always did. Now, Marnie, her sister, was down in the downstairs family room. She looked out the window to see Kelly's legs, like just walking towards the car and getting in, and then the car drove off down the road. Now, about an hour after Kelly had left the house, her mom started to worry and kind of wonder why she hadn't called. like Kelly always called it, was a standing house rule. So Marion started to call around to families that she knew, like the lady at the post office, parents of her friends. Do you know a guy, Bill Christensen, that just moved in not too long ago? And she really expected one of them to say, like, oh, yeah, yeah, I know that guy and his wife. But she was met with, like, no, Bill, no, I know a Todd, I know a Doug, but no Bill. So Marion was suddenly hit with that kind of oh shit mom moment when she realized that she hadn't got an address, she didn't get a phone number, she didn't even know the names of the kids that she was supposed to be babysitting for. So Marion didn't even wait until midnight, which is when Kelly was expected to be home. She called the RCMP and reported Kelly missing. Now, the police, they didn't like it right away. Like, they smelt a rat right off the hopper. Like, who's this guy? Where's he keeping Kelly? Like, hopefully alive. Now, it wasn't hard to track down some initial leads. I mean, everyone in town knew Kelly, or at least one of the Cook family members. So by the first light of day, the helicopters, people on horseback, an entire search team, volunteers, RCMP were out in full force. Now, Kelly's best friend, Cindy Krebson, had said that Kelly was not the type to just run off. She was a planner. She was really careful about things. She had wanted to be a lawyer when she grew up. She was considered a rather old soul. She was also looking forward to her 16th birthday, when she was going to get her driver's license, and her parents were going to pay for driver's ed school for her as a gift to her. So when hearing about this babysitting and the phone call thing, there was a few residents that got a little bit freaked out about some things that they hadn't thought too much of at the time. But after hearing that Kelly was missing, one of Kelly's friends, who has not been and will not be identified by name, reported to the RCMP. Well, actually, she initially reported it to her principal at her school, but it went to the RCMP that on April 18th, which was the Saturday before Kelly disappeared, that she had gotten a phone call from a guy saying that he was new in town, needed a babysitter. And she had told him that she was actually busy that night. So he asked if she knew of any other sitters that were like her. And she gave him Kelly's name and number, and then the name and number of another girl that she knew from school that also babysat. And like, this little bit of information pretty much ruined this young woman's life. I mean, feeling that, if she had gone babysitting that night, or if she hadn't given Kelly's number. And no one, not even Kelly's parents, ever blamed this now grown woman. But the guilt that she put on herself was unimaginable. Now, Walter said that Kelly was a victim of circumstances and nothing more.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets. Always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
So they were able to track down that this call to this girl had come in from a phone at a local hotel or tavern. And on that day, so right around 4 p.m., which is when the girl remembers getting the phone call from that guy, a guy walked into the bar and basically demanded to use the phone. He was remembered because he came off as rude and kind of arrogant. So he used the phone and then ordered a case of beer, which is a thing in small towns here. They don't usually have liquor stores, so you go to the tavern and you get what's called off sales. Anyways, he made some rude, grumbling comment about not getting his change back quick enough, and then he left. And at the time, the description of the man was that he was tanned and heavy-chested, and then he had an abrupt manner about him. They were also able to track down where the call to Kelly had come from that morning. There was a Shell gas station just about 13 kilometers outside of town where both a trucker who was returning to his rig after filling up and the gas station owner remember this guy coming to use the phone. The trucker was leaving the gas station and heading to the truck when this guy stopped him and asked him if he could use the office phone because the payphone outside wasn't working. And the trucker said, well, I don't know. I don't work here. Go ask the guy inside or something to that effect. So the guy walked into the service station and asked the owner, who was like sitting at the counter or desk or whatever, to use the phone. Now, the man turned his back to the owner when he was on the call, but the owner was a little bit worried that the guy was going to try and make a long distance call. So he was kind of watching a little bit as he dialed. But it was a local call and he remembered the guy talking about babysitting. He just remembers hearing the word babysitting with someone. So then he left after that. Now the police had a sketch done and I'll try and post it on Instagram and Facebook for you, but it is not very helpful. The description though might be, it was also in the initial reportings back in 1981 that he was described as wearing sunglasses and that he would put them up on his head whenever he walked indoors, like it was like a habit of his. The service station owner also said that the guy looked like a farmer to him, but he didn't remember him wearing a hat necessarily, but just that he looked like a farmer. He also described the guy as abrupt. The other thing that they find really strange is that the payphone outside was what they call a country payphone. So I don't know if you guys remember payphones very much, but remember how most of them, you pick up the receiver, you put in the dime or the quarter or whatever it was, and then you dial the number. Well, this phone was one where you dial the number, but you don't actually put your money in until the other person on the other line answers the call. So that is probably why he thought that the phone wasn't working, because he didn't realize that. However, this guy did know that the office phone that was in the gas station was what they call a party line. And it's a phone where you have to pull the little plunger thing out before you dial the number. And he knew enough to do that. So although the police initially believed that this guy was somebody from around that standard area who kind of knew the area, they kind of wondered then if maybe he had just researched the area and was actually from somewhere else. However, in that a town of like that size, outsiders would have stuck out like a sore thumb around that area. There's also a rumor that back in March of 1981, the school principal had gotten a call from a man who was inquiring about a female student that was on the figure skating club and had recently had her picture in the newspaper, which could have been either the initial girl that he phoned about babysitting or Kelly, because they were both figure skaters. But the principal wasn't an idiot, so he wasn't giving out that information, and so the man hung up. Either way, this guy had thought out his crime pretty extensively beforehand. So I'm just going to read you this description from that's from the initial sketch diagram. Age approximately 30 to 45 years, 5'10" tall, 180 pounds, medium to heavy build, barrel chested, a swarthy appearance, very weather-beaten face and hands. His face was tanned, heavily creased, not an attractive face. It actually says that in here, not an attractive face. Blue windbreaker jacket, possibly with company crests or badges, blue trousers, short, dark, but not black hair. It covers his ears. Nose has a heavy bridge, however, doesn't appear broken. No sideburns, clean shaven. Face was round rather than long, an abrupt, egotistical manner. And now the vehicle that had driven up to the house was described as a light-colored, full-size American car, possibly a four-door, and definitely had Alberta license plates, which back in the 80s, again, if you remember, we had license plates on the front and the back of the cars. What's interesting about this sketch, though, and this description, is that Unsolved Cases Canada has a different sketch with slightly more sort of narrowed down description details, and it's a way better picture of this guy. It's a lot more distinct, but I can't tell what date it was from, and there's no other sites or newspapers that have ever run it. So I'm not actually sure if it's even accurate, because, why wouldn't everyone be using that one? It just didn't make sense. So it kind of makes me wonder if Unsolved Canada didn't just kind of do the sketch based on the description that I was just talking about. The problem is that the two sketches don't look anything alike. On the second sketch, he's described as 5'9" with curly hair, fair tan skin, and look like a farmer. It appears to be a fairly newish sketch because they reference a $100,000 reward. Now, the reward money was initially raised by local neighbors and businesses, and by April of 1982 was around $30,000. Then it went up to $56,000 by 1991 or so, and most recently now it sits at $100,000. But at the time, no one could find this guy, and the RCMP interviewed everyone in town as well as about 700 other people. They searched the records of sex offenders, anyone that had been in the area around the time that they could track down, but there was no sign of him or Kelly either. And then when a month had gone by, there was still quite a bit of news coverage keeping Kelly's name and information out there. People really wanted to find this guy, and the police were pretty certain that Kelly had met with foul play. Walter and Marion, Heath and Marnie, they were still clinging to a little bit of hope that possibly she was alive, but their grasp on that hope was fading. Now, Kelly's uncle, Doug, who was living in Montreal, he wrote into the paper here that she had been sold into white slavery, which we call sex traffic these days. It's not just for white people anymore. And he told them that he had been to every go-go in Montreal looking for information on her. He had figured that she wouldn't have been taken to Calgary or Edmonton because there was just too much news footage about it. I'm not really sure why he felt compelled to say all of this publicly, especially with her parents reading it. I mean, at the time, I'm sure this little bit of fame in the papers felt good for him, but I don't think it did anything to further finding her. And actually, earlier in the year, Walter's brother had passed away, and then only 2 weeks before Kelly had disappeared, his mom had died. So the family, I think, had enough on their plates as far as I'm concerned. And it turned out that he was wrong about it anyways. On Sunday, June 28th, 1981, it was a normal day for a group of about four teenagers that were preparing to go dirt biking on the north shore of the Tabor Irrigation Canal that's known as Chin Lakes. Now, Tabor, Alberta, is a town of about 8,000 people. It's about 213 kilometers to the south of Standard, so about a two-hour drive. Now, Tabor is known as the corn capital of Canada. It holds a corn fest every August, and it was originally just a water filling station for the CP railway line. But once they started building irrigation channels there, it became the home of Rogers Sugar for growing beets. Now, part of this irrigation system was the Chin Lake Natural Reservoir, which fed Tabor and the surrounding areas with water for mostly for agriculture. It's not exactly a picturesque area, but it has this very large shoreline that's rather barren, so it's perfect for dirt bike riding on. Chin Lakes is about 16 kilometers outside of Tabor. Not a lot of people go there for recreation. It had also been a really hot spring and summer so far that year, so the water level had fallen at that time. So the teens had just started their riding when they came across this grisly discovery of a girl's badly decomposing body that had been uncovered by the lowered water level. It was identified by dental records as Kelly Cook. Now, Kelly had been found, she was face down near the shore, and her face was facing towards the west. She had three ropes tied around her body that were attached to two cinder blocks to her side that were weighing her body down. And they only discovered her basically because of this temporary increase in water demand had lowered these water levels, which just revealed that she was there. Kelly's body was badly decomposed, so an actual cause of death is not actually known, but asphyxia is believed to be how she was killed. All of the most recent reports say that because she was fully dressed when she was found, there was no evidence of a sexual assault. Now, no one but the police and the medical examiner's office actually has the autopsy reports. And of course, DNA wasn't a thing back then. It is possible that she was redressed before dumping the body, or it could be that something stopped him before he could finish what he had started, because I truly believe that this case was sexually motivated. I mean, the fact that the initial target, if she had been the target and it had just been like sort of a revenge plot against her family, he wouldn't have then just picked a different girl that was recommended to him. He wanted a young girl. And I think that it was probably for some kind of sexual fantasy. So when Kelly's body was discovered, the news did do an update of the description that the man that they were looking for was last seen wearing casual clothing and a sport type team jacket with a crest on it. The original investigation was a team of five RCMP detectives, and had by November of 1981, they had a list of about 150 persons of interest that they were interested in. On July 2nd, Kelly's body was at the funeral home and it was being prepared for her service. And at 7:30 that night, a man came into the funeral home and demanded to see the body. Now he said he was a friend of the family. He was turned away, obviously. And the cooks say that they don't know of any friends or family that would have done that. And the body had actually only been transported from the medical examiner's office over to the funeral home that day. So not even the family knew that it had happened at that time. Now, the last clue that I'm going to give you is actually the very first tip that came into the police before her body was found. So this tip was when she was still just like a missing person, is that on 10 p.m. on the night of April 22nd, 1981, which was the night that she went missing. Remember, she left the house at around 8:30 and this was 10 p.m. An operator with AGT, remember we had those back then. So you dialed zero, I think it was zero that you dialed to speak to the operator. And then they look up a number for you or connect you to someplace. Well, she got a call that had come in from a payphone in Hazar, which is about 20 minutes east of Standard. She heard what she thought was a woman scream, and then the phone was cut off. Now, she said the scream was loud enough that she had to actually remove her headset. Now, there is a belief that this woman was actually 15-year-old Kelly. Hazar is a town that if you head east of Standard, you get to Hazar, and then you would drive directly south to get to Tabor and Chin Lakes, which is where her body was found. By 1990, there were 2,200 persons of interest in this case. Now, I'm not going to bother you with a list of suspects that have been thrown out over the years. The majority of the ones, you know, that were, say, convicted for other crimes are dead now anyways. So instead, I'm going to leave you with some parting words from Kelly's sister, Marnie. She says, "To say we miss her for sure, but I don't think we actually miss her being anymore because it has been so many years, but we definitely miss what should be. For my family, there is barely a day that goes by. For the community, it is something that has happened in the past, but people have not forgotten her. I think the public doesn't know any more or any less than we do. I think what we know is what is out there. I know that is still very much in the limelight, and the RCMP still look at it as very much part of their day. But the individuals that are responsible for her case are also responsible for current major crimes as well. So you want your resources to go to the right places. I certainly wouldn't want them to focus on our case when there is so much other bad going on in the world right now. I have been contacted by people that are very much involved in these sleuth sites, and with the couple people I have been contacted by, in no way are they helping. They are very quick to point fingers at people. I think it's a form of slander myself when they print these people's names on these websites. That is what we believe, and I think that is what the RCMP believe, that is going to come from someone. They told us years ago that it would more than likely be solved through a deathbed confession or a turn of events in people's lives, a scorned wife or a girlfriend who would just say, I'm not keeping this secret anymore. Kelly Cook's murderer is likely now in his 70s, so time is definitely of the essence for justice for their family. And that was the murder of Kelly Cook. And I'm going to be back again next week with another episode. In the meantime, you know what to do. Do your thing. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC Health/whatsyourwhy.